SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to the Early Line on Sports Grid on Sirius XM Channel 204. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Aaron Dolan. Time to get to our 7-7 top headlines. So, of course, MLB opening day was yesterday. There was 15 games slated, but that turned into 13 games. We had the Nationals-Mets game that was canceled due to the Nationals' COVID issues. Then the Orioles-Red Sox game was canceled due to a rain delay. They'll be playing today. But, Kev, overall, opening day having COVID issues off the bat is not one of the most positive things.
No, less than ideal for sure. Also, yesterday we're making the case, Jacob DeGrom, a little MVP. They pull it back from us. It's going to be interesting to see, who goes out there and gets the ball if this game takes place on Saturday. One of the unfortunate things is, they build in the kind of day off a lot of times for these teams the next day. That way, if something goes wrong with the weather, you can start it up. We'll see that with the Red Sox and the Orioles. Unfortunately, we can't do that here because this is a COVID delay for the Mets and the Nats. So hopefully they play Saturday. Excited to see DeGrom and Scherzer whenever it is.
Yes, and those tuning in right now on SiriusXM that aren't able to see Kevin, he is wearing a Yankees polo, and unfortunately World Series favorites did go down yesterday. The Dodgers lost as well as the Yankees on opening day.
Yeah, very, very frustrating there, but it did serve as a good reminder. I almost wonder if bookmakers and odds makers are like, whoa, we didn't need all of the favorites to lose. Don't let everybody know that this stuff can get that dangerous that quickly. I mean, the fact that you add the Yanks and the Dodgers now sitting both at 0-1, and you've got the Tigers and the Pirates sat there at 1-0, a wild wake-up call. We got 162 of these things, and sometimes those big favorites are going to really let you down.
Yes, unfortunately they will. But there's a lot of great headlines from yesterday's MLB slate. One of them being the Angels taking down the Chicago White Sox 4-3 with two runs in that eighth inning to push them ahead. Kevin, great game for them.
Yeah, absolutely. The LA Angels are a team that are very hopeful they can go out there and make the postseason with the best player in baseball, Anthony Rendon. They paid a ton of money for as well. Shohei Ohtani ranked inside the top 10 for the American League MVP honors. And they step up and get a win over a Chicago White Sox team that is the second choice to come out of the American League. It's a big opening day result for the Angels team, about as big as you could probably have with it being only game one of 162. A great result for the Halos.
Yes, it was. Let's switch it over to the NBA. The Nuggets, of course, they're tied now for the number four spot in the Eastern Conference standings with the Lakers after the Nuggets beat the Clippers last night 101-94. I know we already broke this game down, but for those that are just joining, what is going to be the impact with the number four seed tied right now?
Yeah, it has double the impact. One, with Jokic inside the top four, we could probably close up these MVP markets. I could argue to you that he should be a significantly bigger favorite than he is right now at minus 130. The secondary impact, though, is that the team that is favored to come out of the Western Conference, the LA Lakers, is who the Nuggets are tied with at four. We are a couple of results away, and I don't mean days. I mean if two exact things, Lakers lose, Blazers win tonight, with the number one choice in the West being the sixth seed in the West, some wildness could be afoot here with the Western Conference standings.
Yes, it could be. And, of course, a way more competitive conference in the Eastern Conference standings, but we've been talking about that for the past couple of weeks. And I just want to welcome in our radio audience right now. You're listening to The Early Line on Sports Grid and Sirius XM Channel 204. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Aaron Dolan doing our 7-7 top headlines. Also, Victor Oladipo made his debut in Miami Heat jersey. Obviously, Miami got that win over Golden State. We already broke down that game, but Oladipo had 6 points, 3 boards, 5 assists in 23 minutes of action. Kevin, earlier in the show, you said he fits like a glove into this offense. How do you think he played last night?
Yeah, overall, I thought he looked solid. The efficiency was lacking. But this team right now, the fourth choice to come out of the East at 12-1 behind the Nets, the Bucks, the Sixers, warranted. To me, I would argue still Miami is closer to that group than the Hornets, Knicks, Hawks kind of range, even if the record still doesn't reflect that. I think this is a team that is going to only be playing better basketball as we push towards the postseason. We've also seen Tyler Hero had a 20-piece. Duncan Robinson's been playing better. I think both of those guys a lot more settled in now that they know they won't be traded, as their names were talked about quite a bit when the deadline was approaching.
Yeah, and Tyler Hero's numbers have only been coming up. Let's switch it over to college hoops. So, North Carolina Tar Heels basketball coach Roy Williams, one of the greatest of all time, announced his retirement yesterday. Hall of Famer, of course, more than 900 wins, 3 national championships. It's going to be sad to not see him next year, you know, coaching for UNC. But all around, he's going to build a great legacy throughout the upcoming years, I'm sure, just given everything that he's already done.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, with him saying goodbye, you turn your attention to the future. Who steps up for Roy Williams? They have offers out there right now on both Chet Holmgren and Patrick Baldwin Jr., two of the 5 best players in next year's freshman class. Can somebody come in and secure one of those names down there at Chapel Hill? We'll see.
Yeah, we'll definitely see. Also this weekend, we have the Final Four, of course, on Saturday. Number 2, Houston versus number 1, Baylor, with the Bears laying 5 on the FanDuel Sportsbook. And then we also have number 11, UCLA versus number 1, Gonzaga, with the Zags favored by 14. So 2 number 1 seeds remaining. We'll break these games down in the upcoming segments, but I'm excited for these, Kev.
Yeah, it's look, we are right there on the cusp. The next time we're doing the early line, we're going to be talking about the national championship game, which is very, very exciting. I know which matchup I would like to see, and we'll talk about that here. We'll also, of course, break down how we're going to get there. Final Four right on the cusp.
Yes, you will. And coming up after the break, we're going to talk about some college basketball headlines. Stay with us.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the Early Line on Sports Grid on SiriusXM Channel 204. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Erin Dolan. We want to start off this segment with some top headlines in college basketball. So we've mentioned this twice starting the show, but North Carolina basketball coach Roy Williams announced his retirement yesterday. Kevin, he's one of the greatest of all times. We could go through so many of his accolades, but it's going to be kind of sad to not see him coaching next year. I know, remembering as a kid, always filling out the brackets in grade school and in high school, and always putting his team as one of the ones to go to the Final Four or even win it.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of us moved UNC through our brackets this year against Wisconsin, and they were promptly blown off the court. And I think one of the other things that we've not talked a lot about when we've mentioned this, because you want to, of course, you know, acknowledge the tremendous legacy of Roy Williams, but he said, "I'm no longer the right man for this job." And I don't think that's insignificant, that a UNC team that was going to miss the NCAA tournament, had we actually had one last year, and then this year, a hit-or-miss season for a group that was supposed to be, you know, a preseason top 15 kind of group, bouncing the first round of the NCAA tournament, Roy Williams looking in the mirror and earnestly believing, I don't know if I have it anymore. I don't know if I, whether it be understanding the evolution of the game, whether it be the recruiting trails, whatever it might be, Roy Williams saying, I'm no longer the right man, is something that I, again, don't think we can just overlook. Is perhaps this going to be what we start to see throughout the college ranks, some of the older guard getting passed by?
Do you think it also could be a case where he felt that, obviously, the way the season shook out, that potentially having to rebuild a team and try to become one of the UNC teams that he's coached in the years previous would take so much time and work that it was easier to step away, in a sense, because he obviously has had all that success? I mean, 900 career wins, 3 national championships.
Yeah.
I mean, what more could you want? I don't know how long it would take him to get there, and obviously that's a gamble on yourself and a team, but do you think just overall maybe it was the right time to step away just because it was going to be rebuild mode?
Look, it is a grind. it is a grind every single year. You have to, you know, whether, again, the recruiting trail, the transfer portal as well. And I think that also could be a piece of it. I don't think a lot of these, you know, coaches are overwhelmingly pleased with the idea of the transfer portal, the fact that all of these players are going to be looking to make some moves throughout this year. Now, you would think a school like UNC could take an advantage of something like the transfer portal and bring in some high-level mid-major talents that are looking to make that next step. I am fascinated to see where UNC turns for their next head coach. These are monster shoes to be filled.
Yes, for sure. I also want to mention, in terms of college basketball coach, Texas is hiring Texas Tech coach Chris Beard to the same position for the Longhorns. The Beard will succeed Shaka Smart as the Texas coach. Of course, Texas Tech and Texas are messing me up here, as Texas coach after Smart left to take the Marquette job last month.
Look, trust me, it messed up the people over at Texas Tech as well. Man, they talked about this a little bit there, and the athletic director, Kirby Hocut, and he didn't really mix many words. Now, they worked alongside Chris Beard to make this buyout possible and allow him to go and move to Texas. I mean, you're talking about Texas versus Texas Tech. You're talking about Big 12 rivals. That's not just an easy thing. It's not like, you know, they're not going to see Chris Beard for a while. This is a guy who people think very highly of at, you know, at the collegiate level, only 48 years old. And they even said, prepared to offer him a lifetime contract at Texas Tech. And they're not overwhelmingly pleased with the idea that Beard moved on. But for him, I think this is somewhat of a lifelong dream. Attended Texas, was a student assistant on the coaching staff there. And all in all, I think he probably viewed this as a dream kind of job. Once the Longhorns lost Shaka Smart / moved on from Shaka Smart, I think more so lost as he chose Marquette, even if people weren't wildly happy with his tenure. Chris Beard goes where he wants. Odd vibes, though. Keeps it in conference against the rival. Texas versus Texas Tech will be something to watch next year.
Yeah, for sure. And let's get into some AP awards that were given out. So Juan Howard wins the AP Coach of the Year. He receives 35 of 63 votes from a national media panel to take home the annual award, beating out Gonzaga's Mark Few, Baylor's Scott Drew, and Alabama's Nate Oates. Howard, at the age of 48, is the second Michigan coach to earn the AP honor since it began in 1967.
This is really important, okay, that Juwan Howard wins this in year one at Michigan, because I don't think this is going to be something that just happens once. Juwan Howard has comfortably the best recruiting class in the country coming in next year, has two of the top eight players according to ESPN's top 100, and four inside the top 50. Plus the fact that a guy like Hunter Dickinson can return and be a force in the middle. We'll see who else chooses to stay there. I'm sure he can have his hands all over the transfer portal. It looks like the Michigan Wolverines, for all of the issues that they've had with their college football coach and Harbaugh, and is he the right man, is he not, I don't think there's any questions that they have their next coach for the next two decades, if he wants, in Juwan Howard.
For sure. And then, of course, Luka Garza also won the AP Player of the Year last year. After a brilliant junior season, he averaged 23.9 points per game. And also, he won a handful of player awards, but was shut out for most of the majority of the Player of the Year awards, of course, in favor of Dayton's Obi Toppin. So it's interesting that he won this award. I'm kind of surprised it's not somebody from Gonzaga, but what did you think about him winning this?
No, that's a good point. I think the folks from Gonzaga probably cut in to one another a little bit. People think, oh, well, I think Kisper. Well, I think Timmy. Well, I think Suggs. Well, none of you then. Overall, Luka Garza, pretty much start to finish, was the man for this award. He received 50 of the 63 available votes for this thing. So all in all, it was clearly his. And I think for Luka Garza, finishes a legendary tenure with the Iowa Hawkeyes. They've already said they're going to hang his number up in the rafters, big old number 55. I know that they'll be disappointed they couldn't get out of the second round, but well, that's what happened. I mean, he wears number 55. Oregon put 56 on him in the first half. I still can't believe that performance.
And then Paige Becker is just continuing to make history. She becomes the first freshman to win the AP Women's Player of the Year. She's in a class all by herself. For those that have not seen this woman play for UConn, you need to turn on your TVs, watch her play. She's an insane player. And, of course, I mean, just becoming the first freshman to win this, I mean, she's going to be in a class on her own.
She's a legitimate star. She's a legitimate star at the college level. And the way the women's game works, she can't go to the WNBA. I think she might become the first player, at least that I can truly remember of recent, that's going to start to challenge that idea possibly. She'd be the first overall pick off the board if she left this year for the WNBA.
Yep.
But for Paige to do this in year one, again, first ever freshman in the women's game to win the AP Player of the Year, and there might be three more years of this? I mean, we're talking about a legitimate star in Paige Beckers. The UConn Huskies minus 14.5 in their final four game with the Arizona Wildcats.
Yeah, UConn playing number 3 Arizona. Then you also have number 1 South Carolina playing number 1 Stanford. But again, just want to piggyback off that a little bit. A lot of the basketball players in the WNBA have already come out and said she would be the best potentially in the WNBA right now with just the way that she plays. I know a lot of players are kind of backing her there. Just quickly before we come up against the break, just wanted to say Cade Cunningham also declares for the NBA draft. Not surprised by this. He only played 1 year at Oklahoma State, but he will definitely be missed next year for the Cowboys.
Top 2, and I'm not too... I mean, he's the number 1 player, no doubt about it. If anybody takes anybody else, you fire everybody in the front office. Can't mess this up. He's a bona fide all-star ASAP.
Stay with us here on the Early Line. We'll be right back after the break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to the Early Line on SportsGrid on SiriusXM Channel 204. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Aaron Dolan. We want to get to some Final Four previews. So the first game on the board, number 2 Houston versus number 1 Baylor on the FanDuel Sportsbook right now. Baylor is laying 5 with a total at 134.5. So this is actually the first time, Kevin, in history that Texas teams are in the Final Four in the same year. Baylor enters the Final Four for the first time since 1950, and this is the first time for the Cougars in 37 years. Now, for the Baylor Bears, they're leading the nation in 3-point shooting, and Houston, meanwhile, has struggled over the past 3 games from behind the arc. So do you think this will come down to which team shoots better from there?
Yeah, it's a great point, and I think it's going to really swing this game because both teams are excellent at keeping you outside of the paint, or at least making it really difficult on you when you try to get inside to that painted area. So who can knock down efficiently from beyond the arc very well could be the swing here. And if that's the case, it has to lean towards Baylor, the best 3-point shooting team in the country.
Mm-hmm. And then that Sweet 16, let's kind of take it back here. Baylor struggled in the first half, but got it done over Nova, but was terrible in that game from beyond the arc. And then you have the Elite Eight, Arkansas, came back in another game, who had an 18-point lead. They trimmed that down to 4 points. But the Bears still covered in that one. They kind of found their footing there. They found 53% from the 3-point line, 8 of 15 shooting. Then as for Houston, in the second round, they barely got past Rutgers with a 3-point win. Then they dominated Syracuse in the Sweet 16. Then in the Elite Eight, you had the Cougars allowed Oregon State to score 44 points in that second half after being held to 17 points in that first half. So just given the 2 routes that these teams had to take to get to this position, which team do you think has been challenged the most?
Oh, it's not even a question. It's Baylor. I mean, it's not even up for debate. Houston is the first team in NCAA tournament history to play 4 double-digit seeds in a single tournament, and that was their first 4 games. Now, that is not to slight Syracuse or Oregon State and the runs that they went on, but their path was a 15, a 10, an 11, and a 12. We talked about this Midwest. West Virginia, did they see them? Nope. Oklahoma State? No. Illinois? Not at all. The team that beat Illinois? No. The Houston Cougars' path has been historically easy for a team that has appeared in the Final Four. That's not a slight. That's a fact.
And let's get into some of the players then to watch. So for the Bears, you have Macy Oteague, Davion Mitchell. They had dominating defensive performances against the Razorbacks. Then you have Marcus Caesar ends with 20 points, 5 threes. Quentin Grimes, 18 points in the last game. Houston goes 11 of 32. Just want to mention that again from the three-point line, shooting a terrible 32%. So what player props are you looking for in this game, Kev?
Yeah, there's a couple that stand out to me. We can start on the Baylor side of things. And Davion Mitchell, I think, is someone you could take a look at maybe for over 1.5 threes. He had cashed that in 6 of 7 games before missing it in his last two. But we now have talked a little bit about the strategy to which these teams deploy defensively, trying to keep you outside of the paint. Love the idea of buying low on a prop as well, because every time we buy high, we lose on a prop. We've talked about that. So buying low, there should be plenty of attempts for Davion Mitchell from beyond the arc. I think 1.5 is a solid look. I also am not mad at Mark Vital over 6.5 rebounds. He did miss that last game, but had cashed the over in 5 of 6, averaging 10 rebounds a game in that span. Both of these teams are going to be crashing the offensive glass. Macy Oteague, 20-plus in a Baylor win, player performance double here. That is plus 330. Every single time Macy Oteague has put up 20, they have won the game. But that is not as important as the fact that he's actually now scored 20 or more in 4 of their last 6 games. People are going to look for creative ways to get Baylor at perhaps a better price, not have to lay the number. A big night for Macy Oteague has consistently resulted in a win at plus 330. I like that number. There's a couple on the Houston side, Aaron, that we can talk about, but those are the Baylor ones that jump out to me.
And of course, then, on the Houston side, given that they've been good defensively, with some of these players, would you rather take, let's say, their rebound prop over what they're going to shoot on that night?
Yeah, that's why I'm trying to be careful with the points props. I think, and we talked about this when UCLA played Michigan, obviously with it being the lowest scoring game of the tournament, we were always going to be in a good spot. But the blind bets to the under on these points props, when we did it with the Michigan-UCLA game, 8 and 3 to the under, I would be very selective in any points props that I was going to back in this game. That's why for Mitchell it's threes, that's why for Vital it's rebounds, and for Macy Oteague it's a plus 330 player performance double. For the quick Houston numbers, Aaron, Quentin Grimes over 3.5 threes is still plus money. It shouldn't be plus money anymore, and that's why I think you can still buy it. Where you could argue you're buying the Apex. He's cashed this number in 7 consecutive games, every single game then obviously in the tournament, and has made 4 or more threes in 9 of his last 10 games. We've talked about this. These teams are going to make the others continually have to put up shots from beyond the arc. And how about Justin Gorham, over 7.5 rebounds at plus money, has pulled down double-digit boards in 2 straight games. He had a streak earlier in the season of 9 straight games with double-digit rebounds. So he has this in him to go on this kind of stretch. Plus, Baylor, not the best defensive rebounding team in the country. In fact, far from it, ranking 273rd in the country in defensive rebounding. I think Justin Gorham to grab 8 or more boards. I'd love, you know, an alt prop of like not over 9.5 with Justin Gorham. I think double-digit rebounds could be on the way for him.
So let's get into then some betting analysis. So the Bears, like I said, laying 5 on the FanDuel Sportsbook, the total at 134.5. So the Bears have not lost a game this season when they allow fewer than 70 points. Keep that in mind. The over is 13-3 in their last 16 games overall. Baylor is 10-3 against the spread in their last 13 neutral site games. Now, as for the Cougars, they've been impressive over their 11-game win streak. Of course, anybody who's playing at this stage is on a win streak, going 7-4 against the spread through that win streak. But just want to also mention that Houston is 11-2 against the spread in the last 13 games as an underdog. Cougars under is 4-1 in the last 5 NCAA tournament games. Looking at the money right now on the oddsfire.com, everyone's kind of on Baylor here. You have 77% of the bets on Baylor to cover the number. Then you have 82% of the money on Baylor to cover the number as well. As for the money line, 81% of the money, 64% of the bets are on Baylor. So let's start off with the spread first. I know more ways to win. I had said I had said Houston plus 5. I was taking the points there just because of that rebounding efficiency. But it seems that everybody is going against me here. I wanted to play the number with Baylor, but of course, you know I love the underdog. So I was going to take them because I have no ties anyways to these teams. But what do you think is going to happen in terms of the spread? Do you think Baylor can easily cover that number, or do you think it'd be a tighter game than those expect?
I do believe that Baylor has themselves playing at a level to which I expect them to cover the 5. Baylor has now covered 3 consecutive games, and the only reason that they aren't perfect against the number in the tournament is a miserable backdoor cover laying like 25 points to the 16 seed Hartford. We can throw that. I don't care when they play the 16 seed. They've now been covering in the fashion that which you want, and they do it every single way, right? Like, they went out there, dominated Wisconsin from the beginning, did the same thing against Arkansas. But then when they played Villanova, they were down at half. They actually went to a pick 'em to win the game. They come all the way back and provide you still then a cover in that Sweet 16 game. So I view this as a spot right now where Baylor is starting to play the level of basketball where they were before their COVID shutdown, that we saw them as equals to Gonzaga for a large part of the season. And as much as I have, you know, defended some of those that have tore Houston down who said they were due to lose, you felt like this run to the Final Four was still in them, but they have exclusively played double-digit seeds. They have not covered in 2 of now their last 3 games here, and the fact with this team is I can't trust it. Like, it took this miraculous comeback to even survive Rutgers, and then somehow, after holding Oregon State to only 17 first-half points and being a monster in that game, the game was tied in the second half. Houston is not playing well enough, and Baylor is playing awesome to me, to where I would want to back the Bears in this spot.
Yep. Yeah, and I know you really want to see the Bears play Gonzaga, and I think that's kind of what's going to shake out here. But just one last note quickly on this game. As for the total, more people, of course, are on the over. 70% of the money and bets are on the over 134.5. Do you think there's any shot that this could potentially go under? Just let's say if Baylor gets cold from behind the arc, or if Houston's not able to cover, able to score as many points as their average?
It's tough for me because you've got a Houston squad that has cashed 3 straight unders in the first halves of their games. Very low. On average, 52.7 points per game in the last 3 first halves that Houston has played. Baylor has cashed 3 consecutive second half unders now in this tournament. So we marry those. That's an under. But I do feel like the style of this game could lend itself to an over when you consider how many threes are about to be. I think there's going to be a lot of threes shot in this game. Plus, both of them are top 10 in offensive rebounding, which leads to short, quick, and possible easy possessions for these teams. I'm going to be staying off the total. I'm going to look to jump on it live, lean over, but I don't love it.
Interesting. Yeah, I just want to again recap really quickly. Everybody seems to be on Baylor on the money line and the spread, and as for the total, ton of people are on the over. Stay with us here on the early line. Coming up next, we're going to talk about UCLA versus Gonzaga.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the Early Line. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Aaron Dolan, continuing with our Final Four preview. So we have number 11 UCLA versus number 1 Gonzaga. So let's just call it how it is. Gonzaga is supposed to be here. UCLA is not. UCLA has just beaten Michigan State, BYU, Abilene Christian, Alabama, and Michigan. We cover things here on the Early Line from a betting perspective, so it's not just about who's going to win this game, because I do believe that Gonzaga is going to win this game, but more so, where can we make some money? So a couple couple ways here we could go. So obviously the money line is not going to be great if you're taking Gonzaga. But if you do think UCLA can pull the upset, going to get great value there. Gonzaga has won 30 of their last 31 games by double digits. So best offense in the nation. So if you want to take the over there, you could do that as well. Obviously the Zags are a team that come in number one scoring, 91.8 points per game on average. But Kev, what's the best way for people you believe in this game to make some money?
So I think to your point about, you know, yes, Gonzaga is supposed to be here, UCLA isn't. And we're, you know, Gonzaga against the spread is perfect in all of the games, right? So is UCLA. And they have an extra game underneath their belt. And UCLA has been dogs in four of their five victories here. The only difference against the spread is UCLA didn't cover against Michigan State in the first half of the play-in game. Other than that, you go first half, full game, UCLA is spotless. They were up double digits on Bama. They blew out Abilene Christian in the first half. They were up double digits on BYU. They were up on Michigan as well. Like, that's another – they're not pulling off comebacks, UCLA. They did against Michigan State, but they've now just been leading in these games. However, Gonzaga, again, spotless, flawless against the number in this tournament. No matter how big the number is, the number isn't, has just not been big enough. And that's where you're now just going to have to kind of, Aaron, I think, take these games here for what you believe when it comes to these teams. I just don't believe UCLA is on the level of Gonzaga. I just don't. And
I agree with you there.
I mean, look, we saw what they did to USC, who was playing the best basketball that I would argue anybody in the tournament was playing, the best two-point defense in college basketball's history, allowed Gonzaga to shoot like 70% from two. I mean, it's just one of those things. I struggle to see the world in which UCLA can compete here.
Yeah, we said, I feel like this though before every game where we're like, UCLA cannot compete against Alabama. They cannot compete against Michigan. They keep pulling these upsets, of course, but this is just a different Gonzaga team. I mean, like you said, completely spotless, flawless. I don't know in what area we could see them potentially fall unless one of their players just goes cold, but they have so many offensive pieces that one can pick up for the other. I mean, you have Corey Kispert, Drew Timmy. Both of those had the highest effective field goal percentages remaining in the tournament a couple games ago. So just do you think maybe we turn to some player props as well? I know that taking the under has been effective and efficient in making some money, which I feel like considering the average for these players, the player props were slated at lower numbers. So do you think you would still take the under, or would you potentially go with some overs, just granted that their averages are higher than their player props right now?
Yeah, I think if I were going to look back to the under strategy in this game, I would be really kind of holding my breath knowing that one of these teams is Gonzaga. And I actually like a couple of these Gonzaga players over on their props. Drew Timmy's number is 19.5. The number was 18.5 against USC. We thought, well, come on, he's playing Evan Mobley, Isaiah Mobley. Didn't matter. Put up 23. In the last three tournament games, 30, 22, and then 23. I don't know how you don't like that Drew Timmy over points prop. I also like Joel Eiai over his 10.5 prop. He had cashed that one in seven consecutive games before missing it against USC, where he finished with 9. And again, like, that was the best two-point defense in college basketball's history, at least statistically, that Gonzaga was playing. So if these guys were able to get close or above the numbers that are being listed against USC, and there's some good trends there, it's hard not to like those numbers against UCLA. I would also look from a props perspective at Jalen Suggs over 4.5 assists. In his last two games, he's had 6 assists and then 8 assists. He's controlling everything right now, and it's one of those numbers that I'm not sure they're going to be able to book high enough by the time this tournament comes to an end, with just the pace that they're playing at, the efficiency that they're playing at, and the amount that Suggs right now is just dominating the game on the floor.
Yeah. And Suggs had 18 points in that last game against USC and 10 rebounds. Drew Timmy, 23 points. And Corey Kispert had 18 points, 8 boards on what they call an off night for him, only 6 419 from the floor. So just something to keep in mind there if you're looking towards the player props. How about for UCLA? Obviously, you have Johnny Juzang, the leading scorer. He dropped 28 last game, scoring 14 of the Bruins' first 16 points. So obviously that game did with the Alabama game did go into overtime where Chi also played a really good game. But just overall, would you take any of these players, maybe Tyler Campbell as well?
Yeah, I'm a little more cautious when it comes to some of these UCLA guys because Johnny Juzang, again, he's just been tremendous. His number is 17.5. He missed that against Bama, but again, he fouled out. That had a lot to do with that. He finished bang on 17 in one of these other games. Obviously was excellent in that last game where they beat Michigan, scored over 50% of his team's points. But that ankle is a little untrustworthy. Now playing Gonzaga, they're going to be selling out to stop him. Jaime Jaquez can have a big night. Tiger Campbell, it feels hit or miss. Jules Bernard has been awful after starting 4 of 5 against Alabama. I'm going to step away from the UCLA side of this player props market because I can easily see a world in which everything is Juzang and he's the only one we look at, or there's another world in which they sell out so hard to stop him, it makes your Tiger Campbell's and Jaime Jaquez numbers a little bit more live.
For sure. So now that we've kind of previewed both of those games in their own right, I kind of want to just quickly bring it back to what the exact result could be, some of the futures odds. So right now, the FanDuel Sportsbook, Gonzaga is, of course, minus money, minus 190, Baylor plus 260, Houston plus 800, UCLA 27-1. So not surprising that Gonzaga is at minus money, but maybe if you have an inkling of who you think is going to make it to the national championship game, right now in the FanDuel Sportsbook, you can bet on the exact result. So let's say you think Gonzaga to beat Baylor. That's currently one of the favorites at plus 125. So maybe you'll find better value there instead of taking Gonzaga minus 190 to win it all.
So I think that the Gonzaga number, and this is a number actually that's moved a lot. It really, this thing was 220 to 240 to 230 to 250, and it's now below minus 200. What I think's happened with Gonzaga is Baylor is starting to gain the respect back that they had. I don't think Gonzaga is going to be minus 200 against Baylor on the money line. And I actually think Gonzaga's money line against Baylor, if that is who they play, will be lesser than this minus 190 number. I almost think part of the reason Gonzaga is so much higher is the book is just confidently looking past UCLA. And again, I don't blame them for that, where Baylor's being there in the title game, little bit more up in the air, playing a team like Houston. If you think Gonzaga is going to win the national championship, but you also have some legitimate conviction that Baylor is going to be there, play the exact result at plus 125, Gonzaga to beat Baylor. I don't think... Now, that's, again, you're kind of doing some dancing, though, with a number like that. Because it's basically a three-team parlay, if you think about it, right? You have the Gonzaga-Baylor parlay this week is minus 172. And then you're compounding on top of that whatever Gonzaga's money line would be against Baylor. So is plus 125 worth it? That's up for you to decide there. But I think it's a much better move than laying the minus 190 on the Zags right now.
I agree with you. And maybe if you don't feel comfortable betting on the exact result, you still also have name the finalists. But that Gonzaga versus Baylor, of course, is at minus 170. Gonzaga versus Houston, plus 200. UCLA versus Baylor, 11-1. And then UCLA versus Houston, if you want to throw kind of a long shot there, 22-1. But, Kevin, just I feel like we've talked about this. We think Gonzaga is going to win. Odds makers think they're going to win. They're laying 14. We've seen them dominate. They're winning by double digits against all teams. But for a book to just completely overlook UCLA, is this something that is almost in fairness as well?
Yeah, I think so, because we've also talked a lot about the UCLA luck. And what do I mean by that? Oh, come on. You can't be taken away with what the Bruins have done out here. The free throw line. Every team just can't make free throws against them. Like, that's not a thing. That doesn't make sense. That That is not your defense. There's no such thing as free throw defense, okay? Cody Riley's at the line putting up crazy hands, and all of a sudden Herb Jones can't make free throws? No, okay? It's not like Tiger Campbell is doing the wave, and then all of a sudden Franz Wagner's leaving him short. That's just not how this works. So if Gonzaga goes out there and makes their free throw, I mean, they're just going to blow this team off the court. That's just how I see it. I'll quickly mention, too, with that Gonzaga.
No, I agree with you.
I just wanted to mention quickly with the Gonzaga-UCLA game, because before I forget, is I think my favorite bet from that game is Gonzaga's first half team total over 38.5 points. I think that number is nonsense. I think it has to at least be 40. They've scored 43 or more in all of their first halves of the tournament games thus far. They've cashed the over in all of their first half team totals in this tournament. They just put up 49. Yep. On USC. Best two-point defense college basketball history. Now they play UCLA. I think it's my favorite bet on the board. If I lose it because Gonzaga comes out slow or UCLA somehow keeps putting the voodoo on free throw shooters, fine, so be it. I think it's the best way to play that game.
Yeah, looking at the numbers right now in OddsFire, just quickly go back to this game. 75% of the money, 64% of the bets are on Gonzaga to cover in that game. 79% of the money is on the money line for Gonzaga. What's interesting is the number of bets, 47% of the bets are on UCLA money line. And I think people are kind of just throwing money on that in hopes that, God forbid, there is an upset. They get that crazy, crazy number. But as for the total, which is interesting, the money's split. So maybe people feel that they won't hit the over just because they could hold UCLA to such low scoring, or they think it could potentially clearly go over with the way that the Zags can shoot the ball. But either way, the money's split right now in terms of bets and money.
Yeah, I think if you wanted to back UCLA here, now look, if you're just, well, I'm going to put $10 on the money line, and if they win, I can tell people I knew it and I bet UCLA, have some fun. Go ahead, okay? But I think you'd look towards the first half, try and get a first-half cover with this team, or a first-half team total to the over, something along that nature, because UCLA is not going to come out here and be down by 15 at the break and come back and win this game. It's not going to happen. Now, they could maybe be down 15 at the break and cover 14. I wouldn't bank on it, but maybe. Maybe. But, again, if you're looking to play a money line here, if you know, really have some conviction behind the Bruins, I would look towards that first half, because I think they got to then be competitive start to finish. And they've been good in the first half of their last four games. They've won and covered all of them.
Yeah, and I feel like the first half bets are actually very popular lately, because like you've mentioned throughout the week, people like to get in and out, or then you could potentially live bet that second half to kind of win some more money back. So that's a good play there. But stay with us here on the early line. We'll be right back after the break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the Early Line on Sports Grid on SiriusXM Channel 204. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Erin Dolan. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Lastly, before we leave you on the show, want to talk about the outstanding player markets. Kevin has some updates for you there.
Yeah, so right now, Drew Timmy has finally separated from Corey Kispert as well as Jalen Suggs. He is the standalone favorite at plus 270. And rightfully so. If you needed a creative way, a plus money way, to back Gonzaga to win the title, I actually think you could look at Timmy at plus 270. I know Kispert can catch fire, but there's been a significant gap in this tournament between Drew Timmy and everybody else. He had a 30-13 game against Oklahoma. He was the story of that game against USC. I think Timmy at plus 270, if you're somebody that wants to back the Zags, is a nice way to look at it. Also, as you continue down that board, we try to tell folks here that Davion Mitchell was the best value play if you were looking to bet to win when that number was back at 18-1 and Jared Butler was up there at 8-1. Well, Davion Mitchell cut in half, 9-1, same exact price as Jared Butler. Davion Mitchell has been their most outstanding player. I would maybe even argue to you that Maceo Teague at 12-1 has a better chance right now than Jared Butler, who's 9-1. Two other quick points here. Don't bet a UCLA player. I mean, look, I get it. Johnny Juzang is 35-1. If UCLA was going to win it, cool. But, like, why risk Hami Hakez dropping 30, UCLA doing good things, and then you somehow losing this in a disaster? And then Houston, it is going to be Quentin Grimes if it's going to be someone, but the 8-1 to 10-1 difference between them to win the title and him to win MOP, not worth it in my eyes, Aaron.
Yeah, I agree with you. And obviously, we'll be figuring out who wins that player market sooner rather than later. But just want to mention again, college basketball, we have two games, final four games tomorrow. And then for the women's side, there's two games today right now. Cardinals are playing 6.5 against the South Carolina Gamecocks. And you have the Connecticut Huskies minus 14.5 over the Wildcats. So something just to keep in mind, a lot of basketball going on and also a lot of MLB. So thanks for joining us today on the Early Line. We'll be back Monday morning, 7 to 9 a.m. Eastern, right here on SiriusXM Channel 204.